Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, there's times when I get a bit aggravated, lads, and I know, surprise, surprise, that doesn't happen too often. But I just want to read you a message that we've just got here, an email. Please note, Minister Stephen Donnelly, Minister for Health, is scheduled to visit Punchestown Vaccination and Testing Centre today, Tuesday, at 3 p.m. Any journalists, local media and photographers who wish to attend are asked to be on site at 2:30 before the Minister arrives. 5 minutes, I repeat, 5 minutes will be allocated at the end of the visit for a short Q&A with the local media. Please confirm if you wish to attend. Who do these people think they are? Like royalty or something? Be there before the minister arrives. The local media, remember that includes radio, newspapers, websites, all will have 5 minutes only, collectively, to ask the minister, how's the going, minister? Who will reply, oh, wonderful centre, I'm so proud to be in Kildare today. Talk about such nonsense. Do these people realise that we live in a democracy? They and their handlers. This programme has repeatedly issued requests over the last year to Minister Donnelly's office for interviews, all of which have either not been answered or the minister is not available. It's called trying to manage the message, lads, isn't it? Well, we're not falling for that kind of thing or subjecting ourselves to those kind of conditions whereby we'll bow and scrape to get maybe 1 or 2 minutes to get a question or two in with the minister. But the minister is very welcome to come on Kildare Today or Kildare Focus for a decent discussion on what has happened over the last year and a half and indeed how the government's measures are going on. But we will not bow the knee to such nonsense. Journalists, local media and photographers who wish to attend are asked to be on site at 2:30 before the minister arrives, and 5 minutes will be allocated at the end of the visit for a short Q&A. The arrogance is just unbelievable. And there was I putting up I had a song scheduled since early this morning. You're not going to believe this. It's in since early this morning. What is it at? Well, the title is anyway. Heartbreaker.
Love.
what a great song. What a great singer. Dionne Warwick. Warwick. Now, not Warwick, as in Smithwick and Smithix. Dionne Warwick. And, but, whoa, incredible singer. What a great, great voice. And I have to say, African-Americans have contributed so much to music. I think of the great blues singers like Bessie Smith. If you don't know who Bessie Smith is, check her out. Lads, I think she was born around 1890 or thereabouts. A voice that will put you back in your seat. Yeah, I have to say, in regards to Minister Donnelly's invitation, it's more like something that comes from Buckingham Palace. You know, be there before the Queen arrives now. Stand to attention. You'll get 5 minutes, that's everybody, not 5 minutes each, to throw in the couple of questions. How are you, Minister? What job, what a wonderful job you're doing, everything. This idea of the way that government parties, or political parties, let's face it, but particularly government parties of all hues and persuasions, think or endeavour and constantly attempt to manage the message to reflect on their own views. And the amount of money that is spent on these advisers to advise the government, now this is what we should say, and this is how we should say it, and this is how we'll present it. You know, it's attempted manipulation of the media, which to me is completely undemocratic and undermines democracy. These people are elected to be accountable to you and me, who pay their wages and who pay our taxes. They're meant to be accountable to us, not the other way around. So, anyway, we'll leave it there, as the late and great Bill Hurley, he used to say. We'll leave it there, okie dokie, and we'll move on. Yesterday we mentioned how both the Taoiseach and Minister for Education, Micheál Martin, who, by the way, I didn't know his son was the Cork football goalkeeper until I heard the match commentary on Sunday. And he was taken off at half-time for some reason. I don't know, which was unfair to him. He had played well in the first half. Maybe the Taoiseach, there's some people trying to take the Taoiseach out at half-time as well, according to recent reports, including our own James Lawless, TD here in North Kildare, who said maybe the time, if not right now, but is imminent for Fianna Fáil to examine their leadership. Anyway, I'm going off on another tangent anyway. Both Micheál Martin and Norma Foley, former teacher herself, have announced their determination, their certainty that the schools are going to reopen in September and that the idea of not doing it is out of the question. Well, let's hear from somebody who's actually on the front line rather than being on the outside looking in. Martin Marjoram is Leixlip-based, but he's president of the Teachers Union of Ireland. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Glenn.
It's good to talk to you. I'm on a roll, Martin, I'm afraid, this morning. I've just been annoyed by the Minister for Health, or somebody from his office, or somebody from some office, anyway, telling us...
I got that impression, Glenn. I think that came through.
I thought you were going to tell me, get off the fence and say what I really feel. Martin, at this kind of... I mean, if there's one thing about this whole COVID thing, I don't have to tell you. It's the one thing that is certain is the uncertainty. So this kind of announcement in the middle of July that the schools will open and any idea of their not reopening is completely off the table. What do you and your members make of that?
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you, Clem, that COVID has made fools of us all in the past, most strikingly in the education setting, probably in January when there was a similar determination that we were definitely going back in spite of frighteningly high case numbers. The situation may be radically different now because of the substantial rollout of vaccination. But of course the Delta variant has thrown a new degree of uncertainty into things. So I'm always pretty cautious about any announcement, any plans for the future. Certainly what we've heard most recently in the meeting we had with Public Health and with the department last month was that the same mitigation measures that worked very successfully in schools, that they will also combat the transmission of the Delta variant, even though it is a far more transmissible variant of the virus. So there are grounds
certainly for optimism.
But one of those items that have been mentioned, Martin, in terms of mitigation measures are so-called CO2 monitors. And I was following a thread on Twitter which said the government says it will distribute CO2 monitors to schools. But what it hasn't made clear is it says actually that the government will monitors will be made available to schools. And this particular message says that's not the same thing as saying are being distributed to all schools or indeed whether there will be sufficient monitors available.
Well, the first thing to say is that TUI called for CO2 monitors to be provided to schools last November. Although they don't give any direct evidence with regards to COVID, they obviously do give an indication as to whether or not the air is being replaced in a room sufficiently often, and therefore they can be very valuable. They were made available in the sense that schools were allowed to buy them from existing budgets in the last academic year, but we're very happy to see a much more comprehensive rollout. You're right in that, so I think there is a little bit of uncertainty as to whether or not there will be in every classroom there will be sufficient of them for that, but we want to see them used to the best extent possible because they can help with
they do, but is there
moderating the ventilation in the way that it needs to be done.
But is there also bureaucracy reigning again in that rather than the government unilaterally distributing these CO2 monitors to all schools, after all they have the database of who and what and where all schools are. Am I correct in assuming or inferring that schools will have to actually apply for these in the first place?
Our understanding is that they will be distributed to all schools. That it is the plan is for them to be distributed to all schools rather than for the. I certainly hope there's not going to be any bureaucratic wrangle about schools actually taking possession of them.
Right. Is the success of reopening...
It did not seem to be the case in the discussions we had. It seems like a very facilitative approach that was being taken by the department with this particular...
Right. I heard the Deputy General Secretary of the STI on television last night saying, you know, we will definitely be back at the coalface in September, saying they're happy to cooperate in that. Diarmaid Dupuire, the Deputy General Secretary. Is not all of this predicated, first of all, on teachers being across the whole age cohort being vaccinated? Do you think that's going to be achieved by late August?
In all likelihood, there will be a small number of teachers who won't either be vaccinated or will not have the full protection from the vaccine that they may receive because of the time will not have elapsed sufficiently. And that's something we're very disappointed about because we were promised previously that teachers will be within the first third of those to be vaccinated, and that obviously was changed back in the spring. So there is a difficulty there. We are looking forward to the resumption of our regular meetings with the departments, which are attended by members from Public Health.
When is that going to happen?
Continue to raise these issues. Those meetings are going to resume from next week, the latest date that we have. So they were weekly meetings throughout the last academic year.
Well,
they were very helpful and useful, and a way for us to raise issues such as the one you're raising there.
And we spoke to you extensively, and thank you, Martin, for always such availability to us on the programme over the past year and a half. But can I also say this to you too, that everything, as we say, is predicated on the vaccination. Now, not just the teachers, and then there are those teachers who have underlying conditions and who would be very vulnerable, vaccination or not, but all the data emerging from the current variant is that the impact is far greater on younger people. Now, notwithstanding that the vaccination portal registration is opening for 16 and 17-year-olds today, much of the information so far is that younger people are proportionately being far more impacted by the Delta variant than previous COVID infections and this, that and the other. And that's got huge implications for the resumption of schooling in August, does it not?
Certainly the new variants have brought forward significant additional concerns on top of what was there already. You're absolutely right.
In particular, to young people, that, Martin.
Well, quite right. And that's one of the things that we will certainly have as part of the discussions when we resume these meetings. Because you're right, the opening of the portal is, I would see that as a very positive thing for that age group. And of course, NIAC is going to look at making vaccination available for younger children as well. And we in TUI will be supportive of all measures that come forward from our public health people that do keep the school communities safe. So you're quite right to raise that as an issue, and we share those concerns.
All right. Well, we're all keeping our fingers crossed, Martin, because certainly we want to see the schools reopen. We want to see everybody, teachers, administrative staff and students, all very, very safe. That registration portal is open for 16 to 17-year-olds today. We are in a 60%+ situation of all adults being vaccinated. But who would take a punt on anything beyond the immediate next couple of days in regards to everything? While we must stay focused about it, and hopefully everything will go ahead there. But I also notice, in one just final note, Martin, that school transport, it is intended that will be at 50% capacity, and that will still cause considerable problems to parents, students, in getting to schools.
Well, indeed, it is a vital service, and again, safety measures just have to trump every other consideration at the moment, regrettably, and that has led, as we know, to all sorts of inconveniences in our lives. Look, hopefully, we will be back in school. That's our expectation at the moment, that education will be going forward in the best way that it can, in classrooms, in safe classrooms. That's what we want to see, and we certainly want to see all of these services brought back, and hopefully when everybody is vaccinated or sufficiently vaccinated for us to be safe as a population, getting back to something like normality.
Well, indeed, ending on that positive note, Martin, enjoy the rest of your holidays, if there's such a thing, for a president of the biggest teachers' union, Teachers' Union of Ireland. Martin Marjoram, thank you again, Martin, for your time.
Thanks.
And we'll keep a watching brief on that situation regarding what might happen in regards to schools. Just before I go to the break, by the way, we spoke here, and I spoke extensively this morning about the dangers in the water. Here's the latest story. A man who spent 10 hours in the water near a beach in County Louth before being rescued late last night after his inflatable dinghy capsized is said to be pretty stressed but stable after his ordeal. Here we go again with these flotation devices. The man, who's in his late 40s, had gone out in the water at a place called Whitestone Beach in Dundalk earlier in the day. Gardaí alerted the Royal National Lifeboat Institute at around 9:45 last night. Several groups were involved in the rescue, including rescue helicopter 116. And when they arrived at the scene, the Coast Guard heard shouting from the sea. Remember, it's getting dark now. And the pilot boat in the area also located the man, who was transferred to Bowman Hospital in Dublin and is recovering well. That's after his dinghy capsized. So it goes on and on and on.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Welcome back then. Some of your messages. The listener says, maybe Minister Donnelly's allocation of 5 minutes to the entire media at Punchestown today. It might beg the question that it's about controlling, that he won't mess up his messages too much. Well, as I said, this is all about just managing the media, managing the message. And as an independent media, and we like to think ourselves as of some integrity, we will not certainly be governed by such that just, allows you effectively a minute or two to put a question or whatever else. Nor have we the time to be allocating staff to go out to spend 3 or 4 minutes, listening to the minister, what he has to say, or indeed having to be there beforehand. I imagine, I'm wondering what that's about, by the way. Is it about so that the media can be briefed as to what to do and what they can say or ask or not ask? Because I've been at many a press conference where that kind of malarkey goes on in regards to that. Let's just get in a couple of WhatsApp messages before I go to my next guest, and we'll indeed have Councillor Bill Clear on tomorrow in regarding that whole issue of Road Safety Authority and why what's happening to speed limits in the county, as that new survey we discussed earlier this morning in regards to 71 people now having lost their lives on the roads in 2021. And, you know, at 88,000 speed fines injured and hundreds of people injured in the 400 plus people injured in serious collisions. Carnage on our roads, I say. Hi, Clem, my late mother used to say, better late in the world than early in the next. Yeah, that's a good one in regards to what I said earlier during our road safety report, that better to arrive alive and late than dead early. Keep it in mind. Or this listener's mother who used to say, better late in the world than early in the next one. That's probably actually even better. And there I was thinking I was a bit of a poet. Anyway, not to that. I'll get to some of your messages. Just one note on this review thing. Yvonne has said, the speed limit review in Kildare is opening for public consultation until 25th of August. Why is this consultation on such a critical issue happening in peak holiday time when it's difficult for communities to organise and have their say on speed limits in their localities? Allowance should be made for the holiday period, and Kildare County Council should extend the public consultation into September if it's to be meaningful, says Yvonne. Yvonne, we'll have Bill Clear, Councillor Bill Clear, on that specific issue on the programme tomorrow morning, and we'll get to it then. Right, back to other matters. And citizen participation and building real engagement at local level is vital to re-engage people in the democratic process. Social Justice Ireland has just published another of its monitors, Social Justice Matters. Let's hear indeed from its CEO, Dr. Sean Healy. Sean, you're very welcome to the programme again, and good to hear from you.
Glad to be here as always, Slim.
You say citizen participation is a key to a thriving democracy. Elaborate, please.
Absolutely. I think ensuring that people are involved in making decisions that affect them and affect their communities is a key element in real democracy, because you don't really have a democracy if the decisions are, if the people affected by the decisions are not actually involved in making them in any serious way. Now, traditionally, the way we've dealt with this, and not just Ireland, this is most of the Western world, what we do is every 3, 4, or 5 years, depending on the term of office, we elect people to go off and do their sort of represent us, if you like, put that in inverted commas, and they basically then sort of make the decisions, whether that's at a local council or a national government level. And then after 3 or 4 or 5 years, they come back and there's another election, and you can decide, are these people doing a good job for us, or do we get somebody else to do it? And you re-elect them or elect somebody else in their place. Now, that whole the approach to democracy was put in place way back, well over a century and a bit ago, when travel was very difficult and communications were very slow. But in the world in which we live today, where we can all sit down together, even if we're hundreds of miles apart, through the medium of Zoom or whatever, and when we can actually communicate instantly around the whole world, and we can sit here at 3 o'clock in the morning and watch Mona Machari in Tokyo live in the swimming pool, like that type of, like, this is the world we're in now. It's completely different, and as a result, I think people expect to be involved much more in the decision-making process than they used to be 100 years ago or more. And I think what we're basically saying is that it's time that we began to face up to this. The population is a lot more educated than it used to be. It lives a lot longer than it used to live. As a result, we need a more engaged process which goes beyond electing people to sort of involve people more in the actual deliberation of decision making. And I suppose what we're talking about here is we call it, it's called like deliberative democracy. It's where people are involved in a more ongoing way in making the decisions that, that affect them. And that the contrast is with representative democracy, which people are elected to go off and represent you. Now,
one of the points, Sean, just before you go on, one of the points you talk about here, because it resonates with something that I was giving out yards about in the last few minutes on the programme, that a message that we received that the entire Kildare local media today will have all of 5 minutes to put questions to Minister Stephen Donnelly when he makes his royal visit to the Punchestown Vaccination Centre. And I was making the point, you know, that central to all of this approach is managing the media, not giving the media a chance to put those probing questions that ministers or politicians mightn't like. And in a sense, that resonates with what you were saying here. What we have is top-down government, a highly centralised government, both in terms of decision-making and financially, meaning that citizens are represented more by professional politicians than by their local constituency representatives. I might even go a little more than what you've said there, Sean, by saying that, is it government for the people anymore? Is it government by the people anymore? Or is it all just simply about government of the people?
Well, I agree completely, by the way, with your overall analysis, and I certainly have very, I would be very critical of the kind of way that the governments today, and it isn't just this current government, for quite a while now, there has been a huge amount of the management of the engagement of, we'd say, politicians, the government ministers, the government generally, with the media and with the general public. My own view is that it's much more important to have proper communication and to have proper communication on an ongoing basis with all the people who are in the constituency or whatever, the local area. You're talking about Kildare and you're talking about the racing today. The issue, it seems to me, that keeps coming down is that government isn't so keen on sort of engaging with the kind of the to and fro that goes on in the experience of the implementation of their actual decision making.
Well, then does that mean that our local representatives are in fact failing us? Because at the micro level, we elect our local representatives, councillors, then who make representations to local TDs, usually of their own party, and senators. And these then are tasked with the job of representing each constituency, each local area, by making presentations to government ministers. Are we not failing then at that most fundamental level?
Yes, we are. That particular approach is what was developed basically with the development of Parliament in London at the end of late in the 19th century. Like, it's the type of process you would use if communication was difficult, if travel was difficult and slow. You couldn't very well have ongoing communication on a very solid basis all the time. Today, as I was saying a minute ago, it is possible to actually engage with people, to actually have a situation that people are more involved in shaping the decisions that affect them. And for example, if you look at County Kildare, every local authority in the country now has a public participation network. And those PPNs, as they're called, public participation networks, they bring together all the community and voluntary organisations in the county. They bring together with them, they bring also social inclusion organisations and environmental organisations. Now, they bring them together for a purpose. They are not bringing them together to be sort of doing stuff that politicians might be doing or whatever. They bring them together to involve them in policy at a local level. And very often there's a resistance to this from the people who are currently operating the policy system, whether they are politicians who are already elected and in government or whatever particularly, or whether they are civil servants who are running public servants who are running the system and don't want too much interference, if you like.
All right, that's one element and one perspective, Sean. And finally on this, everything you talk about there even if it is being, if the public participation network is working properly and people are being brought in at every local and representative and group level and community groups, etc., etc., to feed in and inform the development of policy, it is all just fresh air unless your final point of consideration says resource an initiative to identify how a real participative civil society debate could be developed and maintained. Not alone that, but unless the resources are put in place financially to support that, anyway, it undermines the whole thing, does it not?
I completely agree, and that's exactly the point. And like the problem is, we don't have real participation, we don't have participative democracy, we don't have deliberative democracy in the sense that we're talking about here, where you involve local people. Part of the reason, one of the big reasons, is that we don't resource it at all, because we don't see it as important. We run a system whereby it's basically messenger boys and girls basically being sent over and back with messages from each other, from the top down, sending down the message, and people are basically prepared to sort of just carry the message and expecting people just to accept it. I think we're gone beyond that. I think there's people getting really mad about the fact that decisions are being made that affect them, that they don't have a say in, they don't accept anymore, that they don't know that the politician knows better or somebody else knows better than they do. They know that they can have access to all the various information that's required to be on top of the situation, to know the ins and outs of the policy issues that are being discussed, and to make a serious, informed contribution to the decision-making process. And I think that's critically important, because ensuring that people are involved in making decisions that affect them and their communities is a key element of real democracy.
It sure is.
True involvement requires participation that goes beyond voting and representative democracy. Like, voting is very important, but it's not enough. We need local and national government policies affect every one of us, and every one of us should have our say in that process, not once every 5 years, but on an ongoing basis. We need arenas in which to do that, both locally and nationally, and that's the challenge for people who are really concerned about this persistence of democracy into the future.
Okay, and of course that old refrain, we hear it in the programme all the time, people feed into policy making, and at the end of the day it seems to just fall on deaf ears, because that old refrain of show me the money, it's not there to implement it. And that's the resources that the Social Justice Ireland are making. In that very, very point, their latest presentation, Citizen Participation and Building Real Engagement at Local Level, is vital to re-engage people in the democratic process. CEO of Social Justice Ireland, Dr. Sean Healy, thank you for that again, Sean.
Thanks as always for the invitation. I'm always glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And indeed, one listener says, what about the 40 or 50% of people who don't engage in the democratic process, who never bother to vote, and so on? I suppose that's another point to add to the debate. Thank you for that message, and I'll catch up on some more of your messages in a moment. We'll be hearing from Kira shortly after this on another topic of breaking news, and also the former mayor of Kildare, Councillor Mark Stafford, will tell us about some discussions that were raised at yesterday's County Council meeting.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Thank you all so much for engaging with the programme. Really appreciate it. Text and WhatsApping and phone calls, etc., and emails and all of that. There's something I didn't know. There is actually something I don't know, and I certainly didn't know that Charlie Haughey, as says a listener, is having the last laugh regarding the Olympics, because his grandniece is a favourite for a medal in one of the swimming races. Her name is Siobhan Bernadette Haughey, and she's representing Hong Kong. Didn't know that, as my friend Michael Coyne might say. Not a lot of people know that. Some other messages. Thank you. Well said, Clem. Just another PR stunt, most likely. Well, that's all I can put Minister Donnelly's visit down today, as an old PR thing. I suppose he'll say I'm just showing a morale boost to the workers. But to afford 5 minutes to the entire media of Kildare is risible and not acceptable from our point of view anyway. Know your place, Mr. Ryan. Do you not know are less than them? Do you not know you're less than them? Oh yeah. The way government politicians treat us is disgraceful, says Mick and Kyle Dove. Clem, all these schemes make me sick, especially the community employment schemes. After paying PRSI, I got €11 a week for 19 hours work. €11? How does that work? Tell me more. All of these schemes should have been abolished years ago. The only ones benefiting are the employers getting work done for free. Well, we've made that point about exploitation early on in regards to that. And Irish governments have never bothered to redesign the local government system that the British set up, says a listener. That system was set up by the British as they could not give Irish councils and would not give Irish councils much power, as it would have undermined British rule in Ireland. This is one example of where Irish people can blame the English for poor government, says Shannon O'Christine. Kilfalchichak Shannon, Gurimila Magot, Asultan Tiakdurath Shin. And finally, for the moment, there is going to be some young person going to be drowned in Blessington Lakes. Every day last week, there were loads jumping off Blessington Bridge. The guards arrive, tell them to get down off it, and the minute they leave, they're back up doing it again. They haven't a clue of the dangers of a man-made lake. I suppose that's all teenagers and stuff, isn't it, Kira?
Yes, and Clem, I have a story here regarding the mother and baby homes. So the details of the redress scheme for survivors will not be brought to Cabinet until autumn. The Children's Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, had before hoped to bring the scheme's details to Cabinet this week. It's now understood, though, the report on the scheme has yet to be completed, meaning it will be delayed. It's likely to be signed off until at least the earliest September. It had been initially promised that the scheme would be announced by the end of May this year. So we were speaking about mother and baby home survivors just last week, Clem, when you were away, and we were just mentioning things like the movies, like the Magdalene Laundries, you know, bringing what happened to those women to life for people like me who, you know, had never heard of these situations before. And it just continues on for these women and their families. It's horrific.
It is indeed, Ciara. Thank you for that. And pushed out to September. Now it goes on and on. And no doubt we'll be hearing from the 2 Minute Mother and Baby Project on that again, as we've been hearing and following that story over months and months and months. And we will continue to follow that story. Mark Stafford, Fine Gael councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District and member of Kildare County Council, former Mayor Kildare. Kilfalchichak, you're welcome again, Mark.
Good morning, Clem.
You had a county council meeting yesterday afternoon, Mark, and in the generality of things, local property tax came up for what was called consideration of setting a local adjustment factor. Any news on that? Will the property taxes be going up or down within County Kildare?
Yes, Clem, we did. That did come for consideration at our meeting yesterday. Normally it's dealt with at our September meeting, but because of budgetary planning, it was brought forward to our July meeting. And we agreed at our meeting by a majority vote to increase local property tax by a further 2.5%. So local authorities are allowed to adjust property tax by 15% upwards or 15% downwards, or leave it at the base rate. Now, Kildare County Council increased it by 7.5% last year above the base rate, and yesterday we increased it by a further 2.5%, so it brings us to 10% above the base rate for next year.
Why, Mark Stafford, given the difficulties that we've encountered and that property owners have encountered and so on and so forth, why is this measure being taken and decided upon at this time?
Well, Clem, you know, we fully accept the difficulties that people are in, but local property tax is regarded to be a fair tax, that it's across the board.
Why is it fair?
The rates are being readjusted this year, as you know. The bans are being readjusted in November, so it will see that, in fact, the majority of householders will see their rate band remaining the same. Some will see, in fact, a slight decrease. Some may see an increase. But the view is that very many worthwhile projects are funded at municipal district level by the local property tax, and any increase that is made by the councillors is fully retained by the councillors and spent at their discretion within the municipal district.
Okay, you just preempted my very next question, which was exactly that. Is all money raised in Kildare spent in Kildare? It stays in Kildare. You've just answered that it does. Okay, Mark, also coming up yesterday was a report which we don't have eyes on. For what reason, I don't know. I certainly haven't anyway. The meeting was to receive a report on the finished, unfinished and estates under construction in the county.
Yes, every quarter we receive a report on the status of estates in the county and their current status in terms of taking the estates in charge. This is an issue that the members and indeed the staff in Kildare County Council are keen to progress and to see as many estates taken in charge as possible, and the staff, to be fair in the Building Control Department, are working their way through the various estates that have yet to be taken in charge. Various measures are being introduced at local level. Pilot schemes are being introduced to deal with estates which have what are known as development-led infrastructure. So these are housing estates, typically in small towns and villages, that are not connected to the mains, and these have proven to be problematic. Okay. Another issue that I raised, in fact, yesterday was the situation of where the developers have gone into liquidation or have been dissolved. What happens to those estates? And as your listeners may be aware, that there is under Section 180 that the residents of the estate can petition the council to take the estate in charge. But there is still a lacuna in relation to who actually owns the land, even if the estate is in charge. It was established at our meeting yesterday that, in fact, the land is owned by the Minister for Finance. So the council are currently working with the minister, it's possibly a national issue, to address that issue and to see that those lands would be vested in the councils going forward.
All right, okay. On that point, Mark, I see also that Councillor Aidan Farrelly and, am I correct, Tracy O'Dwyer have both been appointed by the council, nominated by the council, to be members of the Community Forum for the Kildare Meath Grid Update. What will be their function and role in doing that?
Yes, I suppose the AirGrid are establishing the Community Forum as part of the Kildare Meath Grid Upgrade Project. So the purpose of the forum is to represent the views of the community and to provide a local voice, guidance and feedback at key stages of the project, any local issues that might arise that they would be addressed, to disseminate information, communicate information, and then to implement, I suppose, the community benefits.
So will those two representatives be a fulcrum through which people who are concerned about AirGrid's plans to run this high-powered line right up Kildare from Dunstown into Meath, will these two councillors, Farrelly and O'Dwyer, be a fulcrum for people to feed information into them about any concerns they might have, and their role in turn to feed information back to the council and to the people of this county?
Absolutely, Clem. Now, AirGrid requested that elected representatives would be taken from either the Clane, Maynooth, Selbridge, Leixlip, Kildare, Newbridge or Naas Municipal District. So, on that basis, Aidan Farrelly was selected from the Clane, Maynooth Municipal District and Councillor Tracy O'Dwyer was selected from the Kildare, okay, Newbridge Municipal District as being those, I suppose, possibly most affected, particularly to the substations, Clem, which I suppose are generating a lot of it.
Exactly, yeah. All right, Mark, we're going to leave it there. Thank you for that overview of the meeting, of the Kildare County Council meeting held yesterday afternoon, with Councillor Mark Stafford giving us that overview of the meeting held in the at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon in Newbridge Town Hall, no less. Thank you for that, Mark, and good morning to you.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, thank you for your company all morning. I'm going to leave you on a happy note with a message who has come in, which has just come in on the WhatsApp. It's obviously from Ireland's youngest ever mother. And it says, "Hi Clem, Kira, what a great show every morning. Thank you so much for that. It's lovely for you to say. Just one day wondering, are they looking at vaccinations for under sixes? I read an article last night. I'm just a worried 6-year-old mum." I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. So worried 6-year-old mum, I know exactly what you mean. You're a worried mum of a 6-year-old, but you put a smile on my face with that, and thank you. And thank you for the kind words about the show and the message. And no, there hasn't been any development or talk yet. I don't think NIAC are considering vaccinations for under fives or sixes. The real risk, as I say, is in the older cohorts. Thank you, everybody. Producer Kieran Noble, we've had a blast on the programme this morning. Hope my alarm goes off tomorrow morning and I'm not, doing the high jump over the bed, running to get in on time. Have a great, great day. John Dunn is up next with the 11 to 2 show. Great music, great features on that programme. And don't forget, Kildare Focus this afternoon between 2 and 3 with Kira Plunkett and Kieran Noble. We'll have more great topics of interest, followed by Ben Atkinson with great classic K-Gold music between 3 and 4. And Paul Power will then drive you home between 3 and 7. What day is today, lads? Tuesday. Oh, yeah, Liam Kett's in early tonight. He's standing in for me for a couple of weeks on the Keolog is Kind. He'll have a great selection of country music across the hours as well. That's today's menu. Buan Tanavos. Enjoy it. Sloan Tommel. Talk to you tomorrow morning. Kira is in the newsroom.